afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today we are gifted to have three Alaska writers with us, poet Joan Kane, essayist Sherry Simpson, and novelist Seth Kantner. Seth is calling in by phone from Kotzebue, and Joan and Sherry are here in the studio with me. They're here to share their storytelling with us, and maybe a few insights and challenges, and I'm sure in many cases their life-saving good humor about facing a story as big as Alaska's to tell. Each has taken their own different slice of that story. I think when you hear them talk about their work, you'll have a new appreciation for how roomy the concept of Alaska is and how lucky we are to have writers willing to consider it for us. We'll meet each of them individually and hear a bit of their work, and I hope together we'll have an informing conversation about what it means to write in Alaska. By the way, this moment of good fortune comes to us because of Alaska Book Week, October 4th through 11th, sponsored by the Alaska Center for the Book and 49 Writers. It includes a week of events highlighting Alaska books and writers here in Anchorage and all over the state. When asked to bring attention to this event, all I could think of was sharing the wealth, inviting writers on the show to talk about their work. I'm deeply grateful to all three of you for joining us. Before we start, I just want to point out our website where I have links to the Alaska Book Week events. So if you get intrigued today by hearing these writers, you can find out where they might be appearing elsewhere during Alaska Book Week. And I also want to say to our listeners, we welcome your calls. And if you have questions about the work of these writers or about writing or about trying to write about Alaska, we welcome your call. In Anchorage, it would be 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. Or you can send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. All right, so let's get started. I would like to basically start our first half hour with some general questions that I'm going to invite all of you to answer. But why don't you each say hello? Sherry, say hello.
Hi. Thanks so much for your interest in this. We're all for books and writers and readers, so yeah. I appreciate your taking the time.
Good. And Joan, welcome.
Hi. Thanks, Kathleen. And thanks as well to Sherry and Seth for taking time out of their writing schedules to, you know, have a conversation today. I've been looking forward to it for a while. Thank you.
Good. And Seth, say hello to your listeners.
Okay, then. Hello. I wish I was there with you guys. It would be nice. Kathleen, were you my editor at some point in the past?
Yes, Seth, I was your editor. I wasn't sure you'd remember that. It was so long ago. But yes,
it has nothing to do with length of time. I don't have much short-term memory anymore. So the longer ago, the more likely I would remember it. Well, you're really good at what you do. You sound great. I wish I could, watch how it all works. But anyway, I'm just home with my phone, and I'm excited to do this.
Well, great. I'm delighted to have you, and I have a feeling that somehow it was a miraculous selection. Like, you three were willing to do it because the other two were coming on, so there was safety in numbers or whatever. I don't know. But anyway, I'm really delighted to have you. Really happy for the listeners of this show because I think it's a great opportunity for them to hear from you. So I want to tell our listeners that we're going to talk generally in the first half hour, and in the second half hour, we're planning on hearing a little bit from each of our guest writers. They're going to read a little bit of something that they've written and talk to us a little bit about it. So that will happen in the second half hour. But let's just get started. I have questions to ask, and I hope each one of you will chime in. And Seth, I'll be sure to, you know, let you know when I'm looking to hear from you. So don't worry. So anyway, one of my first questions was, how did you find your way to writing? And I like to ask this question because I had a sophomore in high school English teacher that wrote something on one of my little papers about my dog, I'm pretty sure. And she said, you can do something with writing. And I took that to heart and I became a journalist and never looked back and never even really considered anything else. I was just so glad there was something, I think. And so I would love to hear from the, this may not be a good question for you. It maybe doesn't make anything come up in your mind, but let's try you, Sherry. How did you find your way to writing?
Well, probably like a lot of other writers, I found my way through reading. I was never found without a book when I was a kid. And if I didn't have a book, I was reading the back of the cereal box. So whenever I had the chance to write in elementary school, I just remember enjoying writing a story, any kind of story. But later that developed into working for the student newspaper in Juneau, where I went to high school, and eventually becoming a journalist as well. And then one day I thought, I would like to be a better writer, and that's very hard to do on deadline. And so, I went to back to school for an MFA degree in creative nonfiction. And
up at Fairbanks?
That's right, at Fairbanks. So kept going after that and feel really lucky that that's all been possible for me.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful career and wonderful books for us. How about you, Joan? How did you find your way to writing?
Well, I guess similarly, as a reader and as someone who, for as long as I can remember, I think I've been always very highly influenced by words and by our world as a verbal world. And I remember from childhood, and I think part of it is, that my mother is a fluent speaker of the King Island dialect of Inupiaq. And, there's a lot of power in words, whether they're in English or they're in another language. And, in some ways, I haven't grown out of that sense of being enthralled by language and what it can do, not just the surface of language, as a lot of my, a lot of work that I'm attracted to is very, has a lot of surface to it, but the deeper parts, emotion, the past, things that, that are characteristic of some of the best literature as a reader that you encounter. So I think that's probably the big thing. But I also had a tremendous high school English teacher.
Those high school English teachers. Right, it matters what you say.
Right. And I think in some way, though, too, it's part not just, learning writing and reading and learning how to engage with literature, but also being encouraged. And I think, as I move into teaching more, thinking about how hard that is, but also how necessary it is, because everyone's got a story to tell and has some way to engage with literature in a way that's meaningful. So
I think we're collectively better when we hear each other's stories than if, there's some assigned storyteller. I don't believe in assigned storytellers. Seth, let's hear from you up in Kotzebue. How did you find your way to writing?
It wasn't cool and glamorous like what they're saying. Sadly enough, I went to college only to find a girlfriend, hopefully, and I had no interest in a degree or any of the classes. The classes turned out to be okay, but I wasn't there for any of that, and I didn't find a girlfriend. But I tried to sign up for what was easy, and so I took ROTC, karate.
Hard to imagine you in ROTC.
I took oceanography and atmospheric sciences, which were, beginning classes, which were real interesting. Karate, you just got beat up. And then there was another class called creative writing, which I'd never heard of, but I thought it might be easy. So I took that. And the teacher was Peggy Shoemaker, who was this really pretty lady who had just moved up from Tucson, and she had been teaching in jails and prisons, whatever they are. She was really encouraging, and she liked my stories, which were, I had no idea how to write a story, or I still don't, actually, but so I wrote stories, and she liked them, and she let me into her graduate class, which was, intimidating, and then I dropped out and tried to go back to trapping. I had no ability with grammar and spelling, and I never liked that stuff. But I read a lot of whatever we had. So when I went back to trapping, the one thing I remembered from 2 years at University of Alaska was just Peggy saying I should go to Missoula, study writing. So I went to Missoula to take creative writing, and I got there, and I didn't know there was a difference between a graduate degree and an undergraduate degree, and I went in to use the copy machine at the creative writing department, and the head of the department hollered at me and said the copy machine was just for graduate students. So I said, I just left, and I didn't take creative writing, and so I wandered around the university, and my choices for the Western University Exchange were, I think, forestry, religious studies, and journalism, and creative writing. And I wasn't taking creative writing at that point because I was mad. And so I walked into the journalism building, and that was the best thing I did for learning how to write. They were pretty hard-nosed people and really super ethical and encouraging. And so it was all kind of accidental.
Okay. That sounds like a true story to me. There's a couple themes here. Seems to me encouragement is a big part of it. There's a bunch of journalists in this, journalism-trained people. My experience in journalism was I had a hard time getting into it. Everybody in the journalism department was so full of themselves because it was so long ago. It was like Woodward and Bernstein time, and it was like, we're taking down the government, and I just didn't feel qualified for that. And I ended up in classical rhetoric because there was one really nice teacher, and I became her TA. But I learned so much about writing there, about audience. That's what I really learned. I wasn't learning that in journalism at that time. I'm sure it's changed now. But then it was kind of people crafting these long, beautiful leads without really thinking about, why would anybody read this? You know, when do they get the hook? You know, and rhetoric really helped me with that. So anyway, there's some commonalities here for everybody. You know, actually, I wanted to ask you, Joan, you went back east to school, so that must have been a bit disruptive. What was that like?
Well, you know, actually, this time of the year, it really reminds me of, you know, this innate, inborn instinct that, oh, it's time to start school again. It's time for me to go back. And I always find that it's nice to enjoy the brief fall that we have in Alaska. But, you know, I think I went away to school because those were the options that I had before me. You know, I think in retrospect, had I ever been asked by the University of Alaska to attend school, you know, here in Alaska, I probably would have stayed. But and when I was very young and I had someone from the Harvard Native American program, you know, talk to me and kind of planted the seed
reach
for
out
me.
To
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of life is just choosing, you know, sometimes what you think is the best thing to do. And in some ways it was disruptive, but in other ways, I mean, you know, you find your education and the skills that you need where you can. But I do, part of going east though, the second time is that I actually worked in radio and you know, did very short stories and helped with stories for National Native News. And,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. This is long ago.
The studio environment is, you've been there before.
Right, and it reminds me that I was not called to a career in it. but I mean, I just didn't, you know, that concision that you need for, you know, a short news story, working in and with other Native people, what interested me was that, that short segment of news that you could do, there was so much more. And there was, I mean, I remember laboring over tape and, you know, the Dilette machine back in the day and thinking about all the things that I couldn't use to really be it sort of the soundbite or that excerpt, that fragment that would make it to a news story, but everything else. And so part of the impulse to even pursue, you know, this idea of really difficult idea of a career as a writer comes out of that, you know, all the things that I couldn't put into a news story that were part of a larger story or a larger narrative. And I'm still, you know, I still struggle with that. I mean, part of it is I've worked a lot in poetry, but, you know, Sherry and Seth are, you know, they work in prose, they work in dialogue, they work in longer forms. And there's more of that arc of the narrative and, you know, more of that, you know, you have figures or characters and more of a relationship.
Development.
Yeah. And I don't know. I it's really hard to do. I mean, I find that to be much harder. I may still find that the poem or the shorter, you know, news story or something like that is a little bit easier for me because that's, you know, it's I get to, you know, do away with all of the other things that, you know, I don't find ready to be part of the work that I'm doing.
Maybe clear away to the essentials or something. I don't know. That's great. Well, let me ask another question here. Let's see. I'll start with Seth on this one. I said, is writing in Alaska and about Alaska, how do you see it, as a burden and a gift or one or the other? I'm thinking about things, Seth, like having to go outside to find an agent or maybe expectations of a writer from Alaska. Oh, you're going to tell something like a National Geographic story. You know, expectations. And also the burden today of all writers, I guess, wherever you come from, marketing, marketing, marketing. So, Seth, what do you think about it? I mean, your story is uniquely Alaskan and uniquely not National Geographic. So how do you was it a battle?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Yeah, I certainly despise the whole idea of marketing and at this point, you know, I don't have the Facebook and all that stuff. And so that's just incredibly aggravating. I thought writers, you know, I didn't know anything about writers, but anyway, when I got tangled up in it, I thought writers just wrote and somebody else, they liked it or they didn't, and that was that. And so that other stuff is incredibly maddening. I'm not much for writing anyway. I don't like sitting down or being inside, so it's all hard. And then regardless of what people try to attribute to me, I don't find it to be even remotely easy, even when I do end up inside and sitting down. So, yeah, it's a burden in a huge way. I think I would have an amazing life in some ways if I wasn't writing. But in other ways, it's really the opposite of that because, you know, almost everybody I meet or talk to or interesting people I bump into, I wouldn't have the courage to talk to them or even know how to meet them if I wasn't a writer and they were knocking on my door. Or,
I do understand that.
Me and,
yeah, I do understand so, that. I think you get permissions. You get special permissions when you're a writer.
Yeah, in some ways you also get sort of the opposite where tends to be around here people think you get $1 million a book. So, you know, that means Joan has what? Sherry has probably $6 million now.
I'm a trillionaire.
She flew in here on a jet.
My children just came out. It's got zero advance. It's going to make zero money. And you know, and there's another million, I'm sure. And so some of that can be kind of aggravating because I don't like to be seen as rich, let alone be not rich. And
people think you're rich. Right. Listen,
That's kind of an aggravating part of it. But once again, the dichotomy there is that I do have the ability to, the opportunity, I should say, to work on things that I think are important. I don't know, you know, protecting caribou or and then I can say, I'm given a stage at times for that. And I wouldn't have that without writing at all. I'd just be, throwing rocks.
Yeah. Well, let me ask Sherry what she thinks about this burden versus gift, Alaska as your topic.
It kind of depends on the day. Excuse me. But, you know, in many ways, of course, it's a gift. I have said before that really I realized pretty late in life that my big goal was to have an interesting life. And being a writer lets me do that. I'm also fortunate that I have a day job that helps me gives me the time and the opportunity to pursue my own interests through writing in a way that's not easy for other people.
Teaching?
Right. I teach at the university at, in our low residency MFA program at UAA. So, that's a great fortune for me. Mm-hmm. To be able to have a job that meshes with my interests but allows me the freedom to not worry about so much the marketing and so on. Those are things I don't think I would be good at anywhere I lived, whether it was Alaska or not. And I think lots of editors and agents are finding their way to Alaska writers. The good writers are sought out, and good writers from Alaska are finding great success. In lots of ways, partly because we have a much stronger writing community than we did even 10 years ago. So that all makes it a blessing that Alaska writers are so supportive.
Right.
I have a friend who's a writer originally from California, Joanne Mapson. She says that she's never known writers who are so supportive of each other, that it's not that way elsewhere, where it's much more of a competitive kind of pursuit. So that makes it a blessing as well.
It probably is because we were so far away. We only have each other, you know.
Right.
Maybe. How about you, Joan? What do you think about that question of gift or burden?
Well, I mean, I guess, and, you know, as with Sherry, it, you know, depends on the day. I like that answer.
I'm using that one again.
I think there's a couple of things. I mean, I think one, I still really consider myself to be a reader primarily mm-hmm. rather than a writer. And it's interesting as as I begin to sort of navigate this area where I'm like, well, I am a writer and I've written books. I don't know how, but I did. And they're there. And there's that. But also, one thing is, especially I remember as a very young reader, I remember being very interested in sort of consuming the biographies of writers that I was interested in. And particularly, I remember my dad gave me a copy of the Frank O'Hara biography when I was a teenager, after I had gotten into Harvard before I matriculated. And I remember devouring it. I mean, I hadn't read anything. So I hadn't read any of Frank O'Hara's poems that I knew of anyhow. And I mean, his life story was so interesting. And I came to his work through his life first, and then to his poems, which I do love. I mean, he's one of my favorite poets and just prolific, amazing writer. But, you know, part of the danger is that for me, not just as a person from Alaska that chose to return to Alaska and make my life here and have my family here, but also as a Native person, mm-hmm. as a person actually of both Native and non-Native ancestry, and as a mother, as a woman, at some point you have to stop allowing the distraction of continuously defining your identity, and not just for yourself and for myself. I mean, it's a very tricky thing, but also for other people, and just begin to let your work be your work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in some ways, I think the hardest thing, I think it's hard for anyone that lives in Alaska, whether or not they have obligations here. But the thing that I found the hardest is actually traveling to other, things like book tours or, traveling outside of the state to things. And I teach in the lower ascendancy program at the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe. And, you know, the last time I went there, it took me 22 hours to get there from home. And it's hard in some ways to maintain, especially when a lot of writing now is very, I don't know how to say this, very careerist. It's really hard. It's really hard. Yeah, it's really hard to maintain that. And, with the prevalence of things like social media, it's also difficult to sort of draw boundaries and say, this is where my life is and this is where my writing, identity is and things like that. But I think those are tricky things for anyone to navigate under any circumstances. But it's an interesting question.
There's not an easy answer to it, really. I'm just going to throw out our numbers again. If you just joined us, we have Sherry Simpson and Joan Kane in the studio here at Alaska Public Media, Hometown Alaska. And we have Seth Kantner on the phone in Kotzebue. And this is part of, Alaska Book Week, and they've made themselves available here. So if you've got questions, we'd love to hear from you at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 if you're outside of Anchorage, or we can also take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So you guys are good with the questions. I mean, you're good with the answers. Complicated. Let me think. I did want to ask about satisfaction. I mean, the writing life isn't, they always say, oh, it's best when you're done or something like that. The only good writing is when it's over or something like that. What do you think about satisfaction? Do you get it, glimpses of it, or only when it's all over? And Sherry, let's start with you.
Oh, gosh.
This is the torture question.
I am trying to think when that comes in.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're working, you feel like you feel good. Feel like you described the thing, you captured the thing you were looking for. That's rare. So, I mean, it takes time and distance away to see whether you got it or not, really.
Yeah.
There's satisfaction in meeting people you don't know who read something that you wrote and want to talk to you about it. That's always exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a big difference to know that somebody's actually reading it, even though that's always in the back of your head mm-hmm. as you go. It's hard for me to look at old things I've written because I'm constantly wanting to fix things I can see in them.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes it's hard for writers in general to just sort of relax and appreciate the fact they did that work. It's done.
Mm-hmm. It's over.
Right. Look what you did. You know, be excited for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before the next challenge.
I was thinking, and you do a lot of research. I mean, and I think it's really fun to talk to people who are passionate about the thing you're trying to learn about because they just spill over.
Right.
But then that isn't the writing. Then you have to take all that back and figure out what to do with it. And that's hard.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it is really exciting to talk to people. And then you want to capture that and you want to do right by them. And that's where all the sweat comes in.
The big challenge.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Seth, how about you? You get satisfaction out of your work or you just suffer through it?
No, sometimes I do. I really like when a sentence comes out just the way I want it to, where, you know, it makes that thing happen in your mind. And, you know, one that comes to mind is, always will come to mind, is Sherry Simpson's, when she walks into the Goldstream store and there's those creamy wolf pelts hanging there. And that's not the way she said it, but just one little sentence that when it comes out right, I'm satisfied with that. Putting those sentences together is incredibly hard for me. I'm not good at it, and frustrating. But when they do come together, yeah, there's satisfaction for sure. I just was reading a magazine came last night with an article of mine in it, and I was just reading it, and somehow was happy how it came out, but the year and a half that I worked on it wasn't.
Maybe you're just happy it's over.
No. You're right about that. But no, generally I'm happy when something's over, but I want it to be the way I want it, and I usually put way too much time into it. And so, yeah, I think I have again, you know, a real high level of frustration, and then I am pleased when words line up the way that I want them to.
Yeah, it's hard work, though. How about you, Joan? What about you in satisfaction?
Well, I mean, I think it's always fun to make something, and I see that in my kids, you know, even if they're playing with sand or digging holes in the yard, you know, it's always fun to make something. And, you know, I'm also relearning how to understand that not everything I write is something I want to have published or put out there for people. I've written a lot in the last year that, you know, I think it's going to stay with me for now. And I'm being a little bit more selective that, you know, writing is satisfying and creating is satisfying. But so I'm learning, too. So is editing and having a little bit more of a filter in between what you write and what you create and what you make available for other people. You know, in a lot of ways, people are very saturated with language, you know, with words, whether it be through social media or, you know, whatever. I mean, so
right. It's almost a cacophony. I mean, trying to break through, I don't know. I have trouble myself as a reader just settling down and focusing because it's all coming at me. I actually went out and bought a special chair for my house. Mm-hmm. It's my reading chair with a special lamp. And it's really, I really need it. And I mean, it's something about the culture that we're in, which I've turned into, you know, attention deficit disorder queen, you know, and I'm fighting it. And so I'm thinking, you know, I loved to read as a kid, and now I struggle to read.
Right.
And I don't know, you know, so it's an interesting, you brought up some really, really interesting things, Jonah, about what's for public consumption, what's for private consumption. Just very interesting. So you are listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy. We have Sherry Simpson and Joan Kane in the studio with us, and we have Seth Kantner on the phone in Kotzebue. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back. And when we come back, we're going to hear them read a little bit of their own work. I'm really thrilled about that and really thrilled to have them on the show. So please come right back. And this is Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we have Joan Kane and Sherry Simpson, Alaska writers, here in the studio with us, and we have Seth Kantner, another writer up in Kotzebue, on the phone with us. We've been talking a lot this first half hour about some of the challenges of writing, being an Alaska writer, even struggling to get the satisfaction out of writing, and we have a lot more questions, but we may return to some of those general questions as this next half hour progresses. And I think what I'd like to do now is I asked each one of them if they would consider reading something for us and then talking just a tiny bit about it. So I'm going to start with Joan, and what I'm going to do first is just talk just a little bit about you, Joan. You have family in King Island and Mary's Igloo in Alaska. You received a 2009 Whiting Writers Award for your first poetry collection, The Cormorant Hunter's Wife. And just a little tiny bit about that I read. The Cormorant Hunter's Wife is a groundbreaking collection of poems made of one long breath. The breath is enough to carry you the distance it takes to fly to the moon and return in one long winter night. Fantastic description. Her second book, Hyperboreal, was chosen as the winner of the 2012 Donald Hall Prize in Poetry and winner of the 2014 American Book Award. And a little description of that book. Hyperboreal leverages the power of language and lyric as its poems contend with issues of Inuit culture and biological extinction. So two pretty heavyweight books. There are many awards, many grants to continue your writing. So we're really lucky to have you with us today. And we invite you to read something, and we'll just listen.
Sure. Thank you. And just a note, my family, my grandmother was from Mary's Igloo, and my grandfather was from King Island. But no one's lived in either of those places for decades. So thank you. I just wanted to clarify that in case there are other King Islanders out there listening.
Glad you did.
Sure. This is a very short poem. You'd asked, you know, how you came to writing. And this is a poem called Dingmiat, and the word means bird. And it's the first word I remember saying in any language. I remember my mom was pulling me on the sled and looking to the sky and seeing a raven in the winter sky, and I remember pointing at it and saying Dingmiat. And I don't know if that's, you know, sometimes you wonder if your first memory is accurate or not.
I think it's amazing that you can remember that.
So that's where the title comes from, is Dingmiat. Of course, now my kids would be able to say, no, the right word for raven is Tulurak.
Corrected by your own children.
But the poem is Dingmiat, and it's the last poem in The Cormorant Hunter's Wife. Dingmiat. Black bird, I have named you. I have known your interdiction. The otherwise sky was profuse in its whiteness. A confusion of snow come again into snow. Raven, who would be made of wax, pitch, in this way, grow fast in my mind.
Thank you. And you did talk about it before you even read it, so... Yeah, I am going to welcome a caller because we always welcome our callers. Hi, Nate. This is Hometown Alaska.
How you doing today, guys?
Just great. Happy to hear from you. What's your question?
Yeah, you know, I have started several novels myself, and I live here in Alaska. And at some point throughout my writings, I get as I'm taking in. You know, the sceneries of Alaska, the wildlife, some of the experiences we all share as Alaskans, I get to that point where I get overwhelmed. And so just want to ask the authors or the writers, what do you do, or if you get to that point, kind of that hump sometimes, how do you maybe push through it? How do you unwind? How do you put things back into perspective and keep pushing through that kind of stuff?
All right. We'll have them tackle that one. Seth, do you want to take a go at it?
Sure. I guess I want to ask him what he meant by overwhelmed.
Okay, Nate.
You know, I guess we have so many facets up here in our state. Like I said, whether it has to do with wildlife, whether it has to do with history, there's just so many things that you can pull into a story, just in basic scenes or dialogues. And but sometimes I just have to step back because I almost get lost because there's just so much to choose from up here. So trying to stay in the element of the story and remember, I guess, how much to concern yourself with bringing Alaska into the story, for me as a writer. I find that challenging.
Yeah, so this is comical. You picked about the worst person you could ask that question of. I have a terrible time making a story. And I do have lots and lots of stories and details and fun and Alaskan stuff to throw into the mix. And so actually making a story is the part I'm not good at. In certain classes I took and certain realities of, you know, trying to make it work, I tend to get rid of everything I write a bunch, but I get rid of it if it doesn't add to the story. And in these short pieces I write for columns and magazines, I don't know what I'm doing. I just sort of keep tossing those paragraphs up in the air and trying to, I usually go back to trying to figure out what I'm trying to say. I don't always know it. That's nonfiction. And then in fiction, I don't want to get too long-winded here, but there's plot-driven fiction and then character-driven, and I really like my people's stories, you know, stories about people. And so I tend to try to tell the people stories and then salt that with Alaskan-ness, if that's a word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. As simple as it is, it makes sense.
We have to keep saying it over and over again, though, right, as writers. So, thank you, Nate. I really appreciate that question.
Hey, not a problem. Thanks for having me.
I'm just going to throw the number out again, because sometimes I forget to do it. 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Sherry, you're up. Let's see, I wanted to tell people a little bit about what you have been up to. Two books before the most recent one, The Way Winter Comes, Alaska Stories, winner of the Chinook Literary Prize, and The Accidental Explorer, Wayfinding in Alaska. And now the most recent book, and I don't know if this is accurate, but I saw, I think, in the book that October 1, 2013 was the publication date. So is this the one-year anniversary of the publication date?
Boy, I didn't even think of it that way. I'm throwing a party.
You should. Anyway, and
can
you teach.
Yes, you're all invited.
We're all invited. All of Anchorage is invited.
Right.
1 year in a row. It is a big book, The Dominion of Bears, and congratulations. It's fantastic. I read some of it. I haven't read all of it. I feel like it's a volume that will be so useful for Alaskans. There's so much information in there. But anyway, we've invited you to read something, and I don't know what you're reading from, so just tell us a little bit about it.
I'm actually going to read from my previous book, partly because I was thinking about this whole idea of Alaska writers and what our challenges are. So when you say blessing and a burden, to me, one of the interesting things about writing about Alaska is getting behind all of the images and the sort of icons and the things that we just stamp all over it and see what are the human stories. Why are we here? What is it we think we want versus what we actually want? So that was a big preoccupation of mine in actually all of the books. It was the same with bears. I wanted to know much more about actual bears, not bears we imagine. So I'm just going to read a little bit from the introduction to The Accidental Explorer.
Great.
Because I think it speaks to the sorts of questions that we're all trying to answer one way or another. Years ago, a secret book existed behind the counter of the hotel in Denali National Park. A friend who worked there showed it to me once. The tattered cover read, "Official Black Book. Enter all silly questions and other strange things within." For season after season, bemused hotel clerks had recorded unusual inquiries made by park visitors, such as, "What time do you turn on the northern lights? Where do they keep the animals in winter? Do bears lay eggs? What do we do on the second day here?" I memorized some of the questions so I could repeat them at parties. It was easy to mock tourists who visited Alaska for a few days and then left, probably forever, never quite certain of what they'd seen and why'd they come. How come the mountain is so far away from the park? Where's my wife? How much does Mount McKinley weigh without the snow? One question haunts me still. The official black book describes an old man who approached the desk to ask, "How far do I have to go before I can say I've been there?" I wish I'd been the scribe who, upon hearing his riddle, copied the words in careful script onto the book's lined pages before stepping around the counter to take the pilgrim's arm. "Yes, my friend," I'd murmur, leading him gently away, "wouldn't we all like to know?" And together we would push through the hotel's double doors and into the unknown world, as if we could discover the answer and return to tell everyone else.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I'm thinking about tourists and all that tourists ask. And it just made me think of this trip. My husband's relatives came up and we took the bus in Denali and we were looking for wildlife on the bus. And we saw some, but their response really was, "Why would you do this if you could go to a zoo?" And so, you know, everybody comes at it from a different place.
That's
and
right.
The time and the, you know, I don't know. For me, just getting off the bus in Denali was a huge transition to be out there in that space and not just safely looking at it. I mean, there's transitions for everybody, huge
right.
transitions for everybody. But both of those pieces were really lovely. And I'm sorry, Joan, I kind of cut you off there. I was anxious to get the caller in because I always feel like they should be rewarded for calling in. Seth, are you game to go?
Yeah, I'm still laughing from what Sherry read, and I didn't know if I was allowed to laugh on the phone. So,
I think so.
I was going to read from Ordinary Wolves, and I hold on, let me shut something off here. So, rattling. I was going to read from Ordinary Wolves. It's near the end, and it starts with in Janet Wolfglove's kitchen, and she's the matriarch of the book. Middle-aged genie pack lady in the village. So this is chapter 24. Janet's doorknob was gone and a sock was stuffed in the hole. TV talk drifted out. I kicked my feet outside on the metal steps and went in. She would complain if I knocked. "Hi, Katuk," she said. She heaved herself off the linoleum and hugged me in her heavy arms. Her warm cheek pressed against my face. The lights and glare were stunning after miles on the trail from Uptu. Over her shoulder, a loud Mountain Dew commercial mesmerized me, flashing sexy bodies and music, water skiing behind a horse. Anna Tessie Washington and Anna Mabel Feathers sat on the floor beside the couch, sewing calfskin mukluks. Their faces were deeply wrinkled, sunken, and beaming. The old women were giggly and tense in the middle of a MacGyver episode. Janet held my cheeks in her warm palms. "I'll make hot water," she said. Tessie and Mabel smiled, no teeth. Stevie's little daughter, Daisy, stared wide-eyed from the high chair. Treason stomped his boots and came in carrying the wolverine he had shot. The old ladies gathered around, clutching at the long hair and conversing in Inupiaq. He laid the animal on cardboard behind the stove. "You should learn to hunt," the old ladies told me. I didn't say anything. The windows were black except the loud TV, a bright aperture to America. MacGyver reappeared with his porcupine hairdo. The ladies dropped the wolverine paws and scurried back to their places. MacGyver was under stress, in a hurry, wiring together a nuclear device or some such nonsense out of a washing machine and a spam can key. I focused on my fix-it competition, MacGyver, trying to impress us with his ingenuity. Let him go a couple decades without a washing machine. He'd be walking around holding that up to the camera. Janet handed Treason and me coffee. She lit a burner to heat soup. "I guess my husband's someplace," she commented to herself. She put bowls on the table. "Go eat, boys," she said. So that was a little long, but that was
no,
the
that,
one I picked out.
Thank you. Thank you, Seth. And tell us why you chose that piece in particular.
Well, I have this thing where I really like to sort of show the ironies and dichotomies between cultures bumping together, you know, MacGyver and sewing mukluks and also just the new and the old, I guess. That's probably why.
I really liked the warmth of the people. I don't know. It felt physically warm. We don't do that in the city, so we're not so warm in the city, I don't think. I don't know. That's just my humble impression.
Yeah, but different places are different, I guess. But, yeah, and then the other reason I picked that was that some lady named Kathleen tried to call on her phone and let me pick something.
It was your assignment. Thank you. Thank you.
I was in a hurry.
I can go back to asking questions, or we could each have you read one more piece. What do you think? Are you up for it, or... looking at each other.
Two of my favorite writers in the state are here, so yes, please do read.
I was going to say, I enjoy talking with you both so much. But I won't be,
You don't have to.
No, that's fine. It's better to do something rather than defer it endlessly.
jump off the high dive.
I'll read a poem from the new book. Actually, I'll read the title poem from the new book.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Hyperboreal. Arnica nods, heavy-headed on the bruised slope. Peaks recede in all directions, in heat haze, evening in my recollection. The shield at my throat, ornamental and worse. We descended the gully thrummed into confusion with the last snowmelt, a tricklet into mud, ulterior. One wolfbane bloom, iodine-hued, rising on its stalk into the luster of air. June really isn't June anymore, is it? A glacier's heart of milk loosed from 1,000 summer days in extravagant succession, from the back of my tongue, dexterous and sinister.
Thank you. Thank you. Tell us a little bit about that.
I think a little bit, again, back to this, I think one reason I like this poem and some of these poems, old poems, is, you know, language. There's so much pleasure in what sound, and when I realize, having tried now, or writing in prose too, is just that there are some writers like Deborah Erling who can write novels that are just sonic. You hear read aloud and you're just like, that's a poem. That's, you know, that also is a novel, but that's really a poem. And I think, I mean, one thing is, the language. It's a very interior sort of poem. It's a poem that deals with the speaker and the self. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, I realize, you know, that was so hard about nonfiction or fiction, is that there, you can't, it's not the same, it's not lyric poetry. I mean, it's not the same meditative thing. And I don't know, I find more comfort in writing poems now that I've tried to write prose a little bit more. And I don't know, I like language. So, and I like things that poems can do, or that I can do in poems that I can't do in other forms or other genres.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for doing that. And Terry, I'll offer you one more, or I can go back to questions. It's up to you guys.
I have a paragraph.
I'm just
sitting here with envy because I had this feeling when I was finally done with this Bear Book project, which took really forever, that if I'd just been able to write one good poem, would have done the same work.
Yeah.
So. This is just a little bit from a chapter in Dominion of Bears about urban bears in Juneau and in Anchorage. And in this part of the essay, I was hoping to see this white-colored black bear that had shown up in Juneau and been photographed by Pat Costello, who was a bear advocate, and he's a wonderful photographer. And he, at the time, was using this bear's unusual appearance to publicize ongoing problems with bears and garbage. A lot of bears have been killed because they'd been eating garbage. And one of his points that I've never forgotten is that when we call them garbage bears, we treat them like garbage, as if they'd been ruined. So here I am in the meadow hoping to get to see it. For a few minutes, I tried willing the bear to step out of the forest. After a time, this effort seemed beside the point. It is only one bear, after all, a moon-colored bear, but no more remarkable than all of the other bears out there. The bear that glimmers in the dark, the bear the color of obsidian, the bear a dusky blue like twilight, the bear tinted the gold of autumn grass, the bear that wears the brown of forest loam. What I wanted was to rekindle the mystery of bears, to reassure myself that bears still occupied a rightful and meaningful place here in the rainforest, in the wilderness, in the community shared by people and bears alike.
Thank you. Thank you. I kind of just want to think about everything that everybody has read and not talk, but we're on a radio show, so we have to keep talking.
That's why they invented books, so you could look at it later.
Yeah. You know, it does make me wonder the difference between seeing it on the paper and reading, delivering it. Is that an evolution for you as writers? And Sherry, you're shaking your head yes. What do you think?
Well, you just, you know, one of the truisms when you're drafting is read it out loud. Then you hear things in a different way. You hear the lines that are slack. You hear
Absolutely.
The words that clunk. Mm-hmm. And so we're all reading and
all
writing.
The time.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's for that sound in someone's head. That's why we call it voice is one reason. So, yeah. I think it matters to imagine people reading it, and it matters that you can read it out loud and hear whether it has music in it or not.
Right, right, right. And that really takes the audience. It's not about being in front of an audience. It's about hearing it in your head and hoping they're hearing it the way you're hearing it.
Right.
But you can only get there by vocalizing it.
Right.
Yeah. I'm thinking of early days at the Daily News where they hired a bunch of radio reporters because they were so good at that idea of right, they read out loud while they were writing. They just read out loud, and they were very good at letting the audience know why they should keep listening. I feel like I don't know that just across newsrooms I've been in, you hear people they're reading their work while they're writing out loud, and they don't even know anyone's listening. I mean, it's just it's part of the process. They have to do it. How about you, Joan? What about going from the page to reading aloud? Or do you read aloud while you write?
Well, in this second book, I wrote most of it on airplanes, so I couldn't do that.
That's hard.
Yeah, well, it was also the only time that I had to sit down that I wasn't busy doing something else. But yeah, I mean, now when I do revisions, yeah, absolutely reading it aloud. If it doesn't feel like something, you know, you can say, or that you, I don't know. I mean, maybe it'll change, and some poems are different, but, you know, poetry is sound, so that's kind of.
It is. It's a kind of music. I'm just going to toss out our numbers one more time, because the opportunity to talk to these great writers is only going to last a little bit longer. 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 outside of Anchorage, or hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I do want to remind folks, we've got links to Alaska Book Week events. There's a lot of events in Anchorage. There's events around the entire state. Some of the writers we're hearing today are participating in those or have participated in other events around the state. So our writers are out and about this week. I think I'm going to ask another question. And I feel a little bad about it. It's not like I'm trying to get to the difficult parts of writing, but I think people are listening to experienced writers, and so I ask the questions about the difficult parts. I guess that it's not that I'm trying to reveal your weakness or anything like that, but so I wanted to talk about writing badly, because of course we all strive not to do that, but we all do it some of the time. And I guess my question would be, is it part of your process, and do you know when you're doing it, or do you only find out later? How about, let's throw this to Seth.
Yeah, it's part of my process, Kathleen, for sure. I don't find out later. I know right away if it's no good, and it's always no good. I can't type, really, so I'm a very slow writer, and then I have a hideous rewriter's disease, so I'm fiddling with one sentence before I even know why I wrote it, and I generally delete that sentence later. So it takes lots of hours and doesn't get too far. yeah, there's a ton of stuff that's not good. Having a good reader or two or three is really helpful. My wife reads all my nonfiction essays, and she's pretty hard-nosed about it. If she doesn't like it, she'll tell me, and then she's probably right. And so that's real good. With fiction, it's harder, different, you know, finding a reader and stuff. I go through that process. I guess the last thing I'd say is that I'm, 100% convinced that if I can do it, anybody can do it. absolutely. And so, it's just sort of a stubbornness and a willingness to put in the time, even though it, you know, most of the time doesn't feel like you're really making progress.
All right, Seth, I've got a couple callers. I thought that might happen. People have been listening to you, and now they want a chance to talk with you. I'd like to welcome Jim on Hometown Alaska. Hi, Jim.
Hello, I'm here.
What's your question?
I want to know if any of your participants think that readers expect a different kind of philosophy from Alaskan authors than they would from somebody else.
Okay, we're gonna ask them to do maybe about a sentence on that. Does anybody have a sentence on that?
I think some readers must, but I think I think for a lot of us, for me anyway, we're just trying to get. We're trying to show people the thing they didn't expect, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Right. And how about you, Joan?
I echo Sherry 100%.
Okay, two endorsements. How about you, Seth? Anything on that?
Yeah, I agree with Sherry. I like surprising people, but I feel real strongly that I don't care what they want. I want to say the truth about Alaska and the truth about people, and I really don't care what they want. I don't care what the editors want either.
Thank you so much, Seth. And I'm going to go to Louise, who has a question. Hi, Louise. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I would just like to ask, what are some recommended writers and perhaps someone who's been on influence on them?
Okay. Seth, let's start with you. Have you been influenced particularly by a writer that you recommend?
John Steinbeck for sure. Real straightforward, straightforward characters. I think he can write a sentence or two, and you're right there on the farm, you know, dumping the dishwater behind the house. And I would recommend for any writer to carry around The Pastures of Heaven, a little book by John Steinbeck. Margaret Atwood, Louise Erdrich. There's a bunch. I don't feel like I got time to.
Okay.
Dig around in my memory.
Let me just ask Joan. How about you, Joan? Anybody you recommend or has been important to you?
Two, I can think a lot. I mean, a lot of people, but Jean Valentine, the poet, and David Foster Wallace as a nonfiction writer and fiction writer.
Foster-Wallace, is that it?
No.
Okay.
Three separate words.
Okay.
David Foster Wallace.
Okay, yeah. David Foster Wallace. And Sherry, we have time for one.
Oh, boy. I'd say Annie Dillard, just because her focus on the smallest parts of life showed me that was worth doing as a writer.
Wow. This has been a terrific hour. Thank you, all three of you, very much. I thank our callers, and I thank the Alaska Center for the Book and Alaska Book Week for making this possible. So thank you, Joan Kane. Thank you, Sherry Simpson. And thank you, Seth Kantner up in Kotzebue. Next week, Charles Wolforth will be back as your host of Hometown Alaska. He's going to focus on the recent bike fatalities in Anchorage. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Monica Gokey is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.